Hello, everybody, and welcome to Single Take with Daniel Barnes. I'm your host, Daniel Barnes, Cox Arquette, saying, hey, let's just all go out there and try and have some fun, okay? No pressure. No pressure. You listen to a lot of really stressful podcasts. I don't want that for us. I want this to be the podcast you put on when you need a little dose of affirmation. Let Single Take with me, Daniel Barnes, be the lighthouse in the squall of your life. I'm here for you. And me and you, this week, we are going to rip these terrible, terrible movies a whole new orifice. So that's pretty exciting. We are going to just go to, we are going to take pride in our work, joy in our work, and we're going to do it together. And it'll be empowering. So don't bring anything that can't get wet. I've got a couple of new releases that I'm going to talk to you about over the next 15, maybe 20 minutes. I won't keep you too long. We've all got places to be. Besides, if someone sees me talking to myself for more than like 20, 30 minutes, I start to look crazy. Who said that? What I do have for you, loyal listener, is an offer. I'm going to give you my single take, no more, no less, on some of the hottest films of the day. What I have for you this week, well, let's just say I hope there's a lot of Sha Na Na fans in the crowd, because have I got a couple of bowsers for you. Oh boy, I'm going to give my single take on Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox and the gang. They're back in the semi-annual Scream 7, and I'm going to talk about the new erotic drama Dreams, starring Jessica Chastain and opening this week in the Bay Area. But before we get into that, I did want to talk for just a minute or two about the recent Berlin Film Festival. If you listen to episode 3 of Single Take, that's the Wuthering Heights episode, I did talk briefly at the top of that show about the Sundance Film Festival and the film that won the big award there. That was Josephine from San Francisco filmmaker Beth De Araujo. Well, it was also in competition recently at the 76th Annual Berlin International Film Festival, a.k.a. BIFF. They don't really call it BIFF. They call it Berlinale. It just wrapped this weekend. So which film took home the prestigious Golden Bear? Was it Josephine? Was it one of the other competitors? It was Yellow Letters by German-Turkish filmmaker İlker Çatak. I am so sorry about that. I don't know much about this film, but the director's previous effort was The Teacher's Lounge. That was one of my top films of 2023. And it was also nominated for Best International Film Oscar that year. Certainly bodes well for Yellow Letters, so I'm really looking forward to that. If you haven't seen The Teacher's Lounge, woo, get ready for an emotional ringer. It's an experience. It really is. So more info on a stateside release for his follow-up, Yellow Letters. That was the big winner at Berlin. In 2025, at the Berlin Film Festival, Rose Byrne took an acting prize for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. And a year later, she's nominated for an Oscar for that role. Anyone from this year's festival who might kind of repeat that journey? Maybe Sandra Hüller. If you remember Sandra, she had a pretty darn good 2023 with The Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall. And she took the Silver Bear for Best Lead Performance at this year's Berlinale for her work in Rose. So more info on stateside releases for Yellow Letters and for Rose as they become available.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney. Did you miss me? Nice little town you found. You and your pretty daughter reminds me of where we grew up.
Well, you sure know a lot about me for another asshole hiding behind a voice changer.
Oh, I'm not hiding, Sydney. Not this time.
Yes, this week's film, it's Scream 7, IMDb synopsis. When a new ghost-faced killer emerges, what? Wow. In the town where Sydney Prescott has built a new life, her darkest fears are realized as her daughter becomes the next target. Dun, dun, dun. Let me tell you, you want hot takes? This take is coming hot off the griddle. I was at the 10:30 a.m. showing today, Friday, February 27th, of Scream 7, and here it is. Here's my take already sizzling right into your ear hole. And I know you said no ear hole stuff. I heard you. We talked about it, but my take, it's right here. It's sizzling. I can't help it from sizzling, and they're your ear holes. They're right. That's just the reality of the situation, is that your ear holes, the hot take, they're sizzling. Things are going to happen. Things are going to mingle. Those are just facts. I'm stating facts. So yes, we've reached the seventh film in the Scream franchise, and for all of the characters and for all of the actors who have come and gone and returned and gone and returned again, there's been very little deviation from the template set by Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson way back in 1996. Essentially, slasher movie tropes plus commentary on slash references to slasher movie tropes. Slasher slash slasher. Essentially a slasher movie where everyone knows they're in a slasher movie. Wes Craven, R.I.P., directed the first four films. And again, every time there was a new movie, you introduce a whole new cast of characters. They're usually dead by the end of the film, but there were mainstays. Neve Campbell as final girl Sydney Prescott, Courtney Cox as newswoman Gail Weathers, and David Arquette as doofy cop Dewey Riley. Even Scream 4, where the 4 was the A in Scream, which was the first attempt to do a new generation, introduce a new generation of the franchise. That left off in the same place with Campbell, Cox, and Arquette. Now, Scream, just Scream, it's not confusing, from 2022, directed by Tyler Gillett and Matt Bettinelli, open. Theoretically took it in a new direction, but of course, no, not really. It was just contemporary franchise management. Is it a sequel? Is it a remake? Is it a reboot? You used to have to kind of choose amongst those. Now, nah, it's all those things. It's all of it. It's all things to all people, so it's nothing to no one. Still set in Woodsboro, still featured Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell and David Arquette, albeit in diminished roles, and really followed the Scream template to a T while introducing what were intended to be the new mainstays of the franchise. We're moving the old folks to the background, and we're getting the new kids up into the foreground. So 2023, you have Scream 6 with the Roman numeral 6 forming part of the M. That was the first attempt to let the new kids really carry the show. They shook it up relative to Scream. Action moved to New York. There's no Arquette. His character was killed off. Dewey's dead. And most importantly, no Neve Campbell at all in Scream 6, with Courtney Cox relegated to a mere cameo. To my eyes, the attempt to focus on the new group exclusively was just a miserable failure. There was just no reason to care, even for a franchise that, to my eyes, you know, some movie franchise that get to like 7, 8, 9 and beyond, you look back and, you know, there's hills and valleys, there's good versions, bad versions, there's, you know, the odd numbers versus the even numbers. No, not with Scream. Started good, got steadily worse with 2, 3, 4, but now worse and worse with every new film. Now, it's plateauing, sure, because, you know, you can only go so far down. But worse and worse with every new film. So now where are we with the new film, Scream 7? We're right back to the beginning, theoretically at least, with Kevin Williamson now behind the camera. He wrote the original screenplay back in the 90s. It's his first time in the director's chair since 1999's Teaching Mrs. Tingle. And by golly, we all loved that. Gone is most of the cast, the new cast from the previous two entries, as well as directors Gillett and Bettinelli Open. They instead made a sequel to their film, Ready or Not, that comes out next month. Yeah, a couple of cast members return, but once again, it's Neve Campbell in the lead. We're not in Woodsboro, but it's a similar sort of small town setting. It's Scream 7, but the 7's just a number. It's not part of the title. It's not a letter. Numbers aren't letters. It's like any little deviation from the musty old formula that has happened over the last couple of films has been fully swept away. And don't worry, we're right back into our rut. So is this lucky number 7 for the Scream franchise, or is it lucky number 11, i.e. a terrible movie? So what do we have for you here? Surprise. A bad film, and more of the same bad film that we've been getting for a while now. We get a rehash of Scream, of course, but that's been happening already. No, nothing new there. But we're getting rehashes of the rehashes, and essentially just a rehash of the entire franchise to date. Absolutely nothing new to discuss here. No ingenuity, no cleverness, no scares. No laughs. I mean, what is the point of this fucking movie except to exist? So what's the wrinkle? Well, Sydney, this time, she's got a daughter named Tatum. That's another callback, first of many. And Sydney's worried that in trying to leave her past behind, she's actually left Tatum vulnerable to the killer. That's the exact same setup as the most recent Halloween reboot. That's all good. So we start with this opening sequence at the original Woodsboro murder house. It's okay, but again, it's just a reference of a reference of a reference. This house that has been turned into an overnight experience, so we get the first murders out of the way. We dispense with it, and now we can get into the plot. We go to Sydney's new home of Pine Grove, not Woodsboro, Pine Grove. So the same, but different, but the same. Life for Sydney, it's quiet, it's idyllic, until, of course, the threatening calls and the violent slashings begin. Hate it when that happens. Tatum, the daughter, she's the new Sydney in every way. The movie makes it very clear. She's the new Sydney. She borrows her mom's old murder clothes. She loves a handsome creep who sneaks in her bedroom window, Billy Loomis-like. She has a bunch of horror-obsessed friends who could also be suspects. And, of course, soon enough, the bodies start piling up, and Sid is reluctantly drawn back into action as the hooded and masked killer taunts her and targets the people close to her. Even for a franchise that has been subsisting mainly on callbacks and self-references for nearly 30 years now, this is as joyless a death march of forced nostalgia as you can possibly get. And now we're in the era of AI deepfake, so anything could be anything. A character killed off 5, 6, 7 movies ago, they can return, and that's okay, they're back, they're not back, LOL, whatever. So in this film, they resurrect Matthew Lillard's Stu from the Verse film as a deepfake, much in the same way that Scream from 2022 resurrected Skeet Ulrich's Billy Loomis as a ghost. And nothing here like hits that level of what the fuck. But maybe that's the problem here. I don't know, 7 films in, just doing Scream all over again is just, what is the appeal of that? I can't even imagine. The movie just fits all of these pieces in all their old places with, as I said, nothing resembling creativity or fun or scariness. This movie leans a lot on more kind of gory, really dumb, fake-looking gory, but just much heavier blood and gore, and to no end, really. As I said, Neve Campbell's back. And that's the, if there's a slight saving grace of this film, it's her. Neve Campbell, still on her first face, and it's still hella fine. But more than that, the film really benefits from her earnestness and her sincerity. I don't think she's necessarily a great actress. I mean, she hasn't really done much outside of the Scream franchise for the last about quarter of a century. But you can always feel that she's giving part of herself. She's taking it seriously while everyone around her, of course, is rolling their eyes and smirking and making sarcastic comments and references and things like that. Neve Campbell as the earnest heart of the franchise coming back. That's the only thing to save this. The last two entries were really, really lacking that kind of emotional sincerity. Unfortunately, like I said, like the franchise is just a mess at this point. You've got all these, like, it's like unmatched pieces from previous iterations mingling with new characters. Dewey's dead. It's like an old board game where you're like, this is the dice from another game, and this piece is from Monopoly, and that's from the Game of Life, and you've just got them all mixed up in the board at this point. Ghosts exist? Maybe, also? It's just all just a mess. I think the first maybe 40 minutes or so of this are watchable, because it focuses almost solely on Sydney. Then at that sort of all end of the first act, beginning of the second act, we get a sort of a fake out reveal resolution, at which point the movie circles back and essentially starts over, and that's where it just dies, because it's so bloated with characters that you don't care about, and it focuses on them at the expense of any last remaining shreds of interest in this entire enterprise. Ooh, there's a scene in the bar where the twins from Scream 5 and 6 are talking with the new kids, and everyone's trying to just kind of outsmirk each other. It's endless. It's endless and absolutely awful. And it comes right at like the beginning of the third act. It's just brutally, brutally bad writing, storytelling on the part of Kevin Williamson and his collaborators. You just can never work up any interest. Williamson, just no verve, no cleverness, none of the old magic, and it all culminates in probably the stupidest, longest, most pointless killer monologue that I've ever seen. And again, we've seen that this was the seventh one just of this franchise. But the reveal of the kill, I can't wait for you all to anyone who actually gives a shit about this. I mean, the reveal in those final scenes, it is so stupid. So stupid. Billy Loomis ghost level of stupid. But not even approaching Billy Loomis ghost level of what the fuck. And I think that's the problem here, ultimately. Why not take a chance with number seven? But they don't. This is the safest, dullest, most pointless, and again, worst entry in the franchise to date. And hopefully, the last. So let's rate this sucker. It's not hard to figure this one out. But I have decided on a rating system for the show. I'm going back to the old bump or dump system. If I say bump it, go see it. If I say dump it, that means skip it. We're going to keep it a simple up or down vote, like the thumbs or like Rotten Fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. And this one, woo, it was born in the dump and it belongs in the dump. Get to the dump, screen seven, bad, bad film. You're listening to Single Take with Daniel Barnes. I'm Daniel Barnes. And much like Otis Redding, I've got dreams. Dreams to remember. But I've also got dreams to forget.
Thank you. I want to thank my beautiful daughter, Jennifer, who soldiered by my side and helped make this foundation work the way it should.
I saw you outside. You were talking to a dancer on the street.
He is so talented. He's from Mexico. Maybe you could help him.
I'll see if the foundation can help.
Everyone, this is Fernando. He's the dance teacher here.
There's no thing about Mexicans. I'm just saying.
IMDb synopsis of Dreams. A powerful American socialite and an undocumented Mexican ballet dancer begin a dangerous affair in this tense, erotic drama. Dreams is written and directed by Michael Franco. He's a director from Mexico who's had 8 or 9 independent films that have played at various festivals. Some have seen a modest theatrical release. He's worked with some known actors, but he hasn't had that movie yet. He hasn't had that breakout film, that one that you're like, oh yeah, that movie. I did like his 2023 film Memory with Peter Sarsgaard and Jessica Chastain. It was an uncomfortable watch, very discomforting, often alienating take on difficult subjects, but I also felt it was a very fearless film. Didn't shy away from some difficult stuff, anchored by two excellent performances. Jessica Chastain, that's hometown girl made good, Sacramento native Jessica Chastain. She returns as the lead in Franco's latest film, Dreams. But unfortunately, this is the type of turkey that can slam the brakes on a promising career. It is a dog. This is about as empty as an experience as I have had in quite some time. Jessica Chastain, she plays Jennifer McCarthy. Jenny McCarthy, I just realized that. Oh, this movie is stupid. A wealthy and stylish San Francisco socialite who runs her family's charitable foundation, which includes a ballet school in Mexico. What they don't know is that Jennifer has stashed her much younger lover, the talented and handsome young dancer Fernando, played by Isaac Hernandez, at the school. In the opening scene, Fernando is smuggled across the border without her knowing about it and heads right for Jennifer's luxurious San Francisco home. She's happy to see him. But remember what Fleetwood Mac told us about Dreams. Players only love you when they're playing. She's happy with the relationship as long as she has all the power, as long as it's on her turf, as long as it's on her terms, as long as it's the way that she wants it. And so that's sort of the push and pull of this movie. It's a relationship that is defined by great sex, but social inequities. She's rich, she's white. She's privileged, she's middle-aged, she moves freely between borders. He's poor, he's Mexican, he's young, and his freedoms are extremely limited. Again, he almost dies in that opening scene trying to smuggle across the border. Through a just unplanned coincidence that just always, the sort that always seems to happen to me, I watched a film just after I watched Dreams called Ruby Gentry from 1952, King Vidor film with Jennifer Jones and Charlton Heston. And it struck me that it's a variation on the exact same kind of story as Dreams. And actually, Wuthering Heights is actually kind of this, Send Help, actually. Almost every film I've reviewed so far has this kind of dynamic. It's this sort of tragic relationship, really a tragic romance that can't cross certain boundaries, social boundaries, religion, class, and gender, all that kind of thing. In this case, a literal boundary, the boundary between the United States and Mexico, and how that inability to cross sort of warps people and even turns them against each other. You know, so you have this thing like Wuthering Heights, like Ruby Gentry, where is it a love story? Is it a revenge story? Is it a dessert topping? Yes, it's all of those things, absolutely. But Franco's film, it is just utterly devoid of energy, devoid of creativity, and frequently embarrassing, I thought. Like Memory, yes, it's discomforting and it's alienating, not fearless, and not discomforting or alienating to any sort of compelling effect. To me, it fits this new mold of the miserable indie movie in which 120 minutes of long silences and people staring into the distance and walking through the desert and chewing food, that's punctuated by a shocking act. And then maybe another shocking act. Two or three shocking acts punctuating absolute nothingness. The effect to me is like if someone who hated Antonioni tried to make an Antonioni film, they would make it as bad as they possibly could. Like, this is what it really is. You know what I mean? It also, to me, feels just like cheating a little bit for a provocateur or a would-be provocateur to think that he's shocking us out of a complacency and a boredom that he created with his own film. I cannot describe how enervating and how numbing this film was. The experience of it was just utterly, utterly unpleasant. I've chosen such a passive pursuit in my life. I sit there and I watch the movies, and now I sit here and I talk about them. It doesn't take effort really to do that. This one took a lot of effort just to make. I felt just like strain of just trying to watch this movie. It's just not good. Just not good. And then, of course, you come to the, again, shocking in quotes ending, which is just complete garbage. Complete garbage. Shame on everyone involved. I don't like to throw the word pretentious around. It's not a word that I use a lot because I think it's often used by people to express their own insecurity. Like, this went over my head, you're pretentious, you know. I'm going to risk it here. I'm going to risk it and just say that this is some pretentious ass shit. Chastain, you know, she's not blameless. I can't imagine what she or anyone else could have done to save this turkey. She has, I'd say, 40 or 50 costume changes. She looks fabulous, every single one. But I don't know. It's a terrible idea, terribly executed. Why make any more of it than that? Like I said, it's a dreams to forget, and I would love to get that process started right away. So that's a big-time dump for dreams. So let's wrap it up here. Scream 7, that's a dump. It's playing everywhere right now. It's probably making a lot of money. Good for everyone. You know, the economy. Yeah. That's also a huge dump for Dreams, which is opening today in select markets. Has your market been selected? It's the question I ask very often. In this case, that would be like getting selected for the Hunger Games. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe you're into that. Some of the people who got picked were into it. Anyway, it's scheduled to open in my hometown of Sacramento at the Tower Theater next Friday, March 6th. And that's all I have for you on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. I'll be back with more reviews of new movies probably next week. If not next week, probably the week after. I'm going to try to do one no more than 2 weeks between episodes, but I got to have something to talk about. Are you a fan of classic films? Well, I got a podcast for you. It is our brother podcast, Cannon Fodder, which I co-host with the great Corky McDonald. Our review of Jenna Rollins and Peter Falk in John Cassavetes' landmark, amazing, brilliant, canon-worthy film, A Woman Under the Influence, is live now. Check that out. We also have 50-some episodes of Piping Hot Conversation for you to check out in our backlog. And coming up the first Tuesday in March, that's next Tuesday on Cannon Fodder, we've got Orlando, Sally Potter's Orlando, starring the great Tilda Swinton. If you want to support any of these endeavors, remember, Scream 7 ain't free. You know what I mean? Popcorn costs money, or at the very least, credits. So if you would love to support this, send me to the movies. Please visit daredaniel.com and find support the show in the menu. The support of the donors, it is so essential, and as always, it is very, very much appreciated. So until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying, I love you, and save me a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.